Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, SiriusXM, Channel 375, the free Odyssey app, and of course, streaming live on YouTube. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476 is the number to jump on board with us. Dusty May, the head basketball coach at Michigan, is going to join us live on the show 20 minutes from now. And then at 5:20 p.m. Eastern, 2:20 p.m. Pacific, he's still in San Antonio. He's going to be doing the Spanish call of the game tonight, the national championship between Houston and Florida for Westwood One Sports. Gravis Vasquez, the former Maryland star, is going to join us. So a whole lot to do today. What was a massive sports weekend with the Final Four on Saturday, and I was in the building for that game between Auburn and Florida as Florida finds a way to get to the championship game tonight. And then I still can't believe what I saw transpire between Duke and also Houston as the Cougars with Kelvin Sampson are off to the Natty tonight. You also had Alexander Ovechkin, the Great Eight, passing the Great One, and then Gino Auriemma wins his 12th national championship. So a whole lot to unpack. We'll also squeeze in some NFL as well. But let's start with the games on Saturday night. So we're going to go in reverse order here. We'll go with the second game first, and then we'll sprinkle in a little post-reaction from Auburn and Florida. I have had the luxury of attending many big sporting events. I've had the luxury of being in the building for some of the most iconic moments in the history of sports. The most stunned I've ever been walking out of a building was when my team, the New England Patriots, were down 28-3 in the Super Bowl in Houston up against the Atlanta Falcons. They were down 28-3 in the third quarter. They came back. They won the game in overtime. James White with the touchdown. Brady got his fifth championship. And Bill Belichick got his fifth Super Bowl championship as a head coach. And I never thought I would see anything more remarkable than that in my lifetime. And that is just a comeback that you couldn't even write it up if you were the greatest film writer in the world, because when it's 28-3 in the third quarter, you thought the game was over. I thought the game was over. The Atlanta Falcons thought the game was over. The Patriots thought the game was over. Everyone thought the game was over. And to have a moment like that, you leave the stadium, and also it's my team, too, that comes back and is on the good side of it. It took days to process, because even though it was real and it was spectacular, it didn't feel like it was real. Seeing Houston and Duke and the game, the way that game ended, I still don't know how it happened. I've had Sunday to digest it. I've had some of Monday to process it. And I still don't know how to articulate, and I know I'm a talk show host, how the Houston Cougars came back up against Duke. This is not me taking anything away from Houston. And I even saw our buddy Jesus in the chat. He's like, hey, you know, give Houston credit. To call it a Duke choke is disrespectful. How else am I supposed to call it? How else am I supposed to refer to it? It's not taking away credit from Houston. We know what Kelvin Sampson has done. We know what his players have done. They have a great chance to win a national championship game tonight and to win it all. But you look at what Duke did and forget about the fact that they were up by 14 with 8 minutes to play. Here are the two numbers. 1:15 to play. Duke was up by 7. I was in the building. I had some Cougars fans sitting next to me. They're still cheering, but they thought that was it. They didn't think they were coming on back. And also, when you get that technical foul late against Houston when the kid reached in on the inbounds pass, no one's thinking Houston is coming on back. You have Duke, who for pound entering the NCAA tournament, as long as Cooper Flagg was healthy, and he was, they were the best team in the tournament. And I get it. We had all four number one seeds in the Final Four. But with 1:15 remaining, Duke is up by 7. 9.9 times out of 10, they close that out. Then, with 34 seconds remaining, it's a 6-point lead. So it's not as if, oh, the final about a little less than 90 seconds were just dreadful. You had a little over 30 seconds left. Duke was up by 6. Once again, they win that game 9.9999999 times out of 10. And they blew it. There's no other way around it. And let's not have kitty gloves on when we talk about this. Because let's be real. Look at the way that we just destroyed John Calipari after blowing that game in the NCAA tournament this year. And that was in the Sweet 16. Now, you take a glance at Duke. They're in the final freaking four. You have a spot in the national championship game on the line. This is not, oh, only criticize the players. You know, the kid that missed the free throw. Cooper Flagg not being able to hit the big shot towards the end. You know, I didn't love the officiating call, the over the back on Cooper Flagg, but I can't crush the officials. It was a bad call. But I'm not going to sit here when you're up by 6 with 34 seconds left, when you're up by 7 with 1:15 left, and bitch about the officiating and say the officials are why you lost. I'm not going to do that. But John Shire, it almost feels like he's not getting enough of the blame here. Right? People are just like, oh, it's great to see Duke lose. Oh, Duke's still hateable post-Coach K. Oh, Cooper Flagg, people were saying he's the greatest freshman of all time. He couldn't even win a national championship game. You know, how about the coach and John Shire? And I like John. When I was in high school, I reached out to John on Facebook. You know, he came on my radio show, all that stuff. I'm a fan of John Shire. And John Shire has done a nice job a few years in on the job. But the other 2 years, when you didn't get to a Final Four, the other 2 years, when you didn't win a national championship game and you have a team with this much talent, I said it going into the tournament. Yeah, if they get to the Final Four, it's nice. But this was national championship or bust for John Shire this year. And that team didn't just lose, right? If a team's just better than you and you lose, you tip your cap to them and okay, it just wasn't our night, right? You get blown out of a game, it happens, it's easier to process. You know, let's just say if Houston hit a shot at the buzzer in a game that was back and forth, wire to wire, and you lose 70-67 and they hit a miraculous three at the buzzer, all right, what can you do? But Duke throughout the game was the better team than Houston. And I kept on looking up at the scoreboard and I said, feels like it should be a little bit bigger margin. And I know at one point it was up to 14 with 8 minutes to play. But the Cougars just kept on hanging around. But I can't even say that Duke never issued the knockout punch because they were up with a 7 with 1:15 left with a little over 30 seconds. They're up by 6. So they did enough, I thought, to win the game. And I know it's a big football stadium that you're in, so sometimes that's weird to watch a basketball game. You don't have the sound as well, like you have the luxury on TV. And I'm watching with my own two eyes. And I still can't believe what I saw. And then walking out of the stadium, it was one of the craziest scenes I've ever seen. Because every Duke fan that you walk by, and let me emphasize, I walked by them. Because they were sitting down, sitting down. You know, I went down towards the court after the game. There were just Duke fans in their seats. They weren't moving. And the Duke fans that found the courage to get up and walk out of the stadium, because eventually you got to leave, they just had a blank look on their face. And you all have been there as sports fans. Your team loses a game like that. Your team blows the game. You don't know what just hit you in the mouth. And you have no clue how to respond. Because there is a sense of shock that just goes through your entire body. And then you looked at the Houston fans, and they had a sense of shock as well. But it was a sense of elation. Like, you looked at them, you go, that person's happy, but they don't know why they're happy. And the reason why they don't know why they're happy is because they don't know how the heck they just won that game. And when you're at one of those big events like the Final Four, everyone has a cell phone. The cell service isn't great, even though they have the complimentary Wi-Fi in the building. And how many people I saw leave that building and then call loved ones and were like, I can't believe we just won that game. It was a really cool scene. So I'm not taking anything away from Houston. I'm not taking anything away from Kelvin Sampson. I'm not taking anything away from his players, and we know they are as one of the toughest teams in the country, and this game tonight, Houston and Florida, should be masterful. It should be spectacular. But the story of the weekend is Duke, not only with the choke job, but an all-time choke job. Once again, they're up 7 with 1:15 to play. They're up 6 with 34 seconds left, and they blew it. This is up there with 28-3. This is up there with the New York Yankees and the ALCS being up 3-0 in 2004 up against the Boston Red Sox. This is up there with the Golden State Warriors having a 3-1 lead up against the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals and not getting the job done. Because John Shire, Cooper Flagg, all these players for Duke, Knippel, they had a chance to not only get to a championship game, but they were expected heading into the weekend to be the team that was there on Monday night and have one shining moment playing and being the last team on the podium. Duke was the pick going into this weekend out of the four teams. We did a segment on Thursday and Friday, Duke or the field. And Duke had it right there. It's not like they didn't play well in the game. It's not like they were horrible. Now, it wasn't their best game, but they still had control of the game. And I still don't know how they blew it. And you could sit there and tell me, oh, you still got youngsters, inexperience, all that stuff, baloney nonsense. I don't want to hear it. They blew the game. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And that is an all-time just terrible choke job by the Duke Blue Devils. And quite frankly, I want to see how they're going to recover. Now, Duke has an incredible class coming in. John Shire is going to be back. But you know it and I know it. A loss like that hangs with the program. Even the elite programs. And we know that Duke's a blue blood. And Duke will win another national championship again. But until they do so, until John Shire gets a national championship as a coach, this is going to be the one that you remember. This is going to be the one that you say, look at this opportunity. Look, you basically had victory in your hands, and then you snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. That's what Duke did. And if I had to rank just real quickly, because I threw out those four choke jobs, 28-3, the Golden State Warriors blowing a 3-1 NBA Finals lead, the Yankees 2004, and then Duke. This is how I do it. 28-3. You know what? Yankees 3-0 ALCS. Because you had four times. You got to win one lousy game. What? You win one. It doesn't matter if you get to a game seven. Like you saw the Florida Panthers up 3-0 last year. They blow it to the Oilers. They won the game seven. You had four other opportunities to win a game. Yankees couldn't do it. And look what it and then catapulted the Red Sox to end up becoming, winning four championships in that run. So I would say the greatest choke job in, you know, since 2004, out of those four that we just mentioned, I would say it's the Yankees in 2004. Then I would say it's 28-3 with just how limited time it was in that third quarter. I would actually say it's Duke with what Duke just did the other night, up by 6 with 34 seconds left. And the only reason I put the Golden State Warriors fourth is because who they were going up against. Now, I get it. You have Steph Curry, right? Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. But the Golden State Warriors were going up against LeBron James, who some may say is the greatest basketball player of all time. I think he's the second greatest basketball player ever. And you also had Kyrie Irving just be absolutely sensational. So that's how I'd rank those four choke jobs. So congratulations to Houston. But the story to me out of the weekend was just what an epic failure by Duke, a game that they had won, and now they walked on home, and look at the disaster that was. Now, real quickly, let me just touch on Auburn and Florida. Walter Clayton Jr. is spectacular. I've said it for now weeks. He's the most entertaining, not the best player, but the most entertaining player in the NCAA tournament. He's lived up to that. I looked, though, at Auburn. That's why I wasn't so hot on Auburn going into this tournament. And I picked Florida to win the game by 4 or 5 on Friday. But when you rely on basketball, on a big man to be your best player, it's very tough to win when the big man has to make those big plays down the stretch. And Auburn's offense, it was a tale of two halves. First half, sensational. Second half, I think they had one field goal with like 10 or 11, 12 minutes or whatever it was. They were terrible. Absolutely brutal. It was horrific watching Auburn play down the stretch in that game. They still had a chance. But Jani Broom, who was banged up, you know, healthy enough to play, and I don't think it impacted him, but how many times they tried to make him do something late, and how susceptible big men are for injuries, how big men aren't the best finishers in the world when it comes to basketball, making a big shot, and he just couldn't do so. So tremendous career at Auburn, but one of those moments where you just had a feeling that Florida was the better team. We all know what Auburn is, and Auburn is sensational, and they had a wonderful season. But the way that Auburn was playing at the end of the year compared to Florida, Florida was the better team. So that leads us to tonight's national championship game between Florida and Houston. All righty, we'll take a break. We'll come on back with the head men basketball coach at Michigan, also formerly of FAU, has been in a Final Four with them a few years back. Dusty May is going to join us when we return in 5 minutes. We are back from San Antonio. I'm in our New York City studios. Had an early morning flight. Went right from the airport here to the studio to talk to you. Jump on board 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Dusty May will join us next. All righty, national championship game tonight between Houston and Florida. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll go on to the guest line right now. Welcome to a man that made the Final Four a few years ago with FAU. Just wrapped up year one with the Michigan Wolverines, won the Big Ten championship. Also had the Wolverines dancing all the way to the Sweet 16, and that is head coach Dusty May here with us. Coach, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
Oh, doing great, Zach. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. So how do you look back at it? Year one in Ann Arbor with Big Blue. How do you kind of look back at what you guys were able to accomplish?
Well, when you go into this situation, you move up a level like we did, you don't really know what to expect. You know, I was an assistant at Florida just a few years ago. I've been at this level before, but recruiting's different. Player management's different. Staff management is different. So there's definitely a learning curve, but I feel like we really, really grew throughout the season, and we're extremely excited going into year two.
So I appreciate your honesty, because we've seen coaches, right, have success like you had at FAU and other spots. They get a bigger job, and then it just doesn't work out. I know it's only 1 year, but you had to tinker with some things. But overall, your general principles are your culture. Why do you think what you guys kind of did at FAU and that culture that you developed was still able to work at Michigan?
I think just the amount of time that our staff puts in with our players, the authenticity of our staff in general, I think really helps. And I think we're all, you know, all these guys are looking for the same thing, a place where they can thrive individually, enjoy it collectively, and then they're improving and they're around great people. So I think that's the same at any level. Obviously, the financial piece has changed the game in the last few years, but I do think all these guys are looking for the same place, an opportunity to be their absolute best.
Yeah, and I know the roster changes more than ever because of that financial stuff that you were talking about. So whoever is on your team for year number two of the Dusty May era in Ann Arbor, what do you want to kind of challenge your players to do after a program? We saw you guys win the Big Ten this year and go to the Sweet 16.
Well, I think we can pass the ball even better than we did this year. We had another good assist year, and I think we played really good team basketball. But I think we can do it at an even higher level, play with much more rhythm offensively, much more pace offensively. And then defensively, we made great strides from last summer to the end of the year. You know, by March, we were a really good defensive team. And then the last thing would be rebounding. You know, when you watch these teams tonight, they're elite offensive and defensive rebounding teams. So I think that's the one commonality between all efficient offenses, whether you shoot a bunch of mid ranges like these teams do, whatever the case, if you get your shots back, you have a chance to be elite offensively.
Dusty May here with us. Coach, I have no clue what's true or false with the portal. I have no clue what you could actually say, but I keep on reading about some of the players that you're able to snag and bring on in. I saw you had the number one player in the portal commit to you guys. Just how have you been able to find the way quickly at Michigan to have success with that portal?
Well, fortunately for us, and I can't speak on any recruits technically right now, and I'm not even sure who's signed and who hasn't and who signed their collective agreements and whatnot. There are a lot of layers to this. I think at the end of the day, it's probably just a handshake agreement between any of us at any time. Now you could get out of anything if you really, really wanted to. But I think we were fun to watch. You know, we had a unique deal with the 2 7-footers, and then we had some athleticism on the perimeter. But we developed a little bit of a niche where we've had good bigs and skilled bigs since I've been a head coach 7 years ago. So I think we continued on that. And then just the way we played, we had guys that played with great energy, unselfishness, and a great they were a connected group. So I think when you watched us play, you could see a lot of the things that these recruits are looking to do.
Now, you have a very, very player-friendly program, just being around you and kind of seeing your teams play. You could tell your players really enjoy playing for you. the last few years with how easy it is for players to leave, has that changed at all the way that you approach practice and the way that you coach, just wondering?
Maybe a little bit subconsciously. We're very intentional about telling the truth every single day, about it, enjoying working with these guys and creating a real collaboration and partnership. That's probably the thing that we take the most pride in. Our staff, we collaborate really well together. And then we also allow our players to be a part of that with the decision-making processes with just about everything we do. But we're very committed to our processes. We're very committed to doing it together. And I think when you recruit high-achieving, intelligent people, they want to be a part of the process and respect the ultimate decisions as long as they were part of the process.
Yeah, and I never fault a kid for going to the transfer portal if a kid's there and leaves whatever reason it is, but it's tough to develop those relationships now with all the other factors. And that's someone that, for me, is pro NIL and pro transfer portal. Someone like a Trey Donaldson, who had a lot of success with your program this past year, when you get the news that he was leaving, just how do you kind of react to that?
Well, first of all, Trey did a lot for us, and he was a really good basketball player for us. So the same as we've done everyone when they've left. For whatever reason, it's wish them well. Let them know we're going to be following them, watching their scores, watching their games. And we're here for them forever because they were in our locker room. He was our teammate. And so it's on to the next thing. And with turnover is difficult because I enjoy the process of getting to know these guys and being part of their lives. But you know what, when guys leave, new guys come in and you have a chance to be a part of their lives as well and meet new people. And so it's just, I think it's all how we decide to look at it. But, you know, I'm excited about the guys we have coming back. We're excited about the guys that we're adding. And once again, the biggest challenge is trying to figure out a way to take all these really talented individuals and make them a team or a unit.
Was it surprising for you, Coach May, that in year one you were able to win the Big Ten and that you were also able to get to the Sweet 16?
You know, the last summer we felt like we had a chance to be good. And when you watch your team play, obviously there's always some strengths and weaknesses. But there were several times I asked the staff, I'd say, you know what, we've got a chance to be pretty good, don't we? And with that, it's if you can compete for a Big Ten championship, and we were in contention until the last week of the season for regular season championship. And that usually puts you in position to win some NCAA tournament games and in position to advance. So we were confident. We had size. We had good, solid depth. We had some veteran guys, but you just never know how guys are going to respond to each other over a 5-month season. It's difficult. These guys, especially with the travel and the amount of stress and anxiety that comes with all these new things that are a part of our game now. But you know, the one thing about our staff, the temperature never changes. We're pretty consistent with our approach every day. So I think our players know that it's a safe place to learn and we're all about getting better.
I know you as a coach, right? Especially when you got to a Final Four at FAU, you take a job like Michigan, you want to get to a Final Four, you want to win a national championship. Now, I wasn't expecting those things to happen for your program this year, so I would imagine with how you guys ended the season, you walk away saying year one was a success at Michigan, correct?
Yeah, we obviously laid a really strong foundation with everything that we do. We're going to continue to improve. You know, as we get through this portal period, we'll sit down as a staff and do another autopsy on our season and figure out what we're going to keep and what we're going to get rid of. But yeah, without a doubt, I think that just representing Michigan, it has so much to sell on its own without us. And then you add in the quality staff and players we have in our program, and we're committed to doing it together. I think we have a lot to sell. And ultimately, that's what you want out of year one is momentum moving forward.
You had so many special players at FAU. To get to a Final Four at FAU, it requires not only good coaching, but good players as well. As Dusty May is here with us, a lot of those players still playing in college basketball. One of them tonight in the national championship game, and Elijah Martin, who had an unbelievable slam dunk the other night as Florida was pulling away up against Auburn. Just when did you know that you had something special in Elijah back when you guys were with the Owls at FAU?
You know, I'll tell a quick story about Elijah. He didn't play a lot as a freshman in college. He just had some habits that didn't really align with our opinion of winning. And literally, I tell the story a lot in recruiting. It was the end that we lose, I think, in the second round of the conference tournament, that time Conference USA, and we're leaving the next morning on a commercial flight. I'm walking down the stairs. And I think he got a DNP the night before. And I see his entire family, his mom, his his sister, his grandma, everyone at the bottom of the steps. And I'm thinking, oh man, they do not want to see me right now. This might, who knows what's going to happen. And I was exhausted, whatever. And they gave me a big hug and said they were so excited for next year. We're going to have a great off season. And the team got so much better. So at that moment I said, you know what? Elijah's got a real chance because his circle was aligned with development and getting better. And then it's probably the first time in my career where his freshman year he didn't play, and on the road 2 or 3 weeks later, after a week or two of individual workouts and team workouts, I was telling people on the road that he was our best player. So he went from a guy that never played to 3 weeks later being who I thought was our best all-around player. And it was a simple mindset shift. And his mind is probably his greatest strength, as athletic as he is. He's just an elite competitor. His drive to win, his drive to improve is impressive. So those were the things that really told me he was going to be having this type of success.
And that's a unique situation, because how many times is a kid not playing? The family says, oh, the coach doesn't know what he's talking about. The player's thinking it as well, but he kept on believing in you. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and obviously we had our ups and downs and whatnot, but and there were several times this freshman year when I would say, you know, I don't know if Elijah's going to make it. It doesn't seem like he's really bought into what we're selling, and I'm pretty stubborn with freshmen. And so yeah, credit to him. I mean, he evolved, he changed, and obviously we met him in the middle, but it was 99% of what he turned into, and that was someone that impacted the game of basketball, every single possession on both sides of the ball, but especially with his competitive spirit.
You know, there was some unknown, right? When you leave FAU to go to Michigan, there was some unknown when he left FAU to go to Florida. But to see how he's dominating in the SEC that sent 14 teams to the NCAA tournament, I'm assuming now none of that comes as a surprise to what you're seeing from Elijah?
No, not at all. And obviously, I was an assistant at Florida a few years ago. My oldest son, Jack, was a walk-on for 4 years at Florida. So I followed the program closely. I have a lot of I'm friends with their entire staff, whatnot. So I followed those guys closely. And it's been fun to watch. You know, our staff here has close connections. We said the first couple weeks of the season, they have a Final Four roster at Florida. They've done a really nice job of team building. And you know, those guys have continued to improve. They've held it together, and man, they've got a lot of weapons. I expect them to play well tonight.
Yeah, and Walter Clayton Jr., he's been the most entertaining player in this NCAA tournament. Coach, if you were going up against him, how the heck do you try to slow this kid down right now?
I haven't watched him that close. I'm a big fan of Walt's. He actually visited us during COVID. We'd only seen him on tape, and we talk about all the hits we have in recruiting. Well, that was one that's probably one of our biggest misses. Just not be able to go off of him on tape, and I don't know who we took at the time, but yeah, I've known Walt for a long time. A great family, just a great guy, and so I've watched him more as a fan as opposed to somebody trying to stop him.
Now, I was at the game on Saturday between Duke and Houston. I was there for both Final Four games, Dusty May. And I still can't believe what happened at the ending of that game with Duke and Houston, right? You've been on crazy comebacks. You've also games that you've had go the other way when you thought you had something won, but a 6-point lead with 34 seconds to go. Man, that was wild what Kelvin Sampson and company were able to do up against Duke.
Yeah, they like our guys this year. The last couple of minutes, you can just see the level of confidence and intensity elevate, and they're relentless. I mean, they're absolutely relentless, and obviously a lot had to go wrong for Duke to lose that game as well as they played. But I think the biggest stretch was probably that run right before half where Houston found a little bit of offensive confidence, because people don't realize how good of a defensive team Duke is. I mean, that might be the two best defensive groups in the country, in Duke and Houston, and obviously it came down to the very last few seconds. And man, what a game to watch though. That was inspiring to see that, and it also it gives us, I guess, a vision of what we need to be working on these next couple weeks and next few months in the off season.
I know what you just said about Florida and how close you are with the staff, but on the other side, you got Kelvin Sampson, who's been around forever, and what he's been able to do at Houston is just so remarkable. American Athletic Conference, and now dominating the Big 12 and the rest of college basketball. If he was able to get a championship tonight in Kelvin Sampson, just what would that mean? Someone that studies so many of these coaches around the nation.
Well, it simply means that a good guy won. I mean, he's an unbelievable human being. You can see how dedicated he is to his family, how loyal he is to his staff and his players. It's a great story. you know, obviously the connections to Florida and Elijah, I want those guys to win. But man, if Houston found a way to win and Kelvin Sampson got to cut down that net tonight, I think all of us guys that consider ourselves just ball, very simple ball coaches would be really, really happy for him.
He is Coach Dusty May, former Florida assistant. We know what he did with FAU in the NCAA tournament, and now at Michigan, first year Big Ten champion, also did take the Michigan Wolverines to the Sweet 16. Hey, by the way, for you, do you feel pressure? Because, like, everyone knows you from what you did at FAU, but if that's, like, the only thing people talk about 20 years from now, it means you didn't accomplish what people then thought you could be able to accomplish. Do you feel pressure taking that Michigan job to just make sure that the highlight of your career isn't the remarkable thing that happened at FAU?
No, my pressure comes from I'm a pleaser at heart. It's making the people that made the decision to hire me, making sure that I do a good job for them and everyone that believed in us. But as far as my own internal pressure, it's not like I feel pressure to make a Final Four. I believe we're going to play for national championships. So the pressure is more just in the week of preparation, trying to beat a single team and making sure that you never lose a game because of something that you weren't prepared for. Those are my internal pressures. But I have so much, I guess, loyalty to those that decide. I mean, I remember our first year at FAU, we lost a couple games. I called Mike White and said, man, I feel so bad for Brian. You know, we've lost two or three in a row. He made the decision to hire me. And he said, man, Brian's going to be fine. You just coach your team. So that was good advice. But yeah, there's not the pressure to make this because I am really process oriented. I enjoy the work. I think we have to prepare for this every single day and trust that it's going to happen.
Just bring a bunch of Zingermans. Just bring a bunch of Notai. You'll please everyone at Ann Arbor. You'll have no problem there, Coach.
I'm only there about 3 or 4 days a week, Zach.
Well, Coach, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much for jumping on board. Great to catch up with you.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
There he is, Coach Dusty May here with us at the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network, the head man at Michigan. What a wonderful season they did have with their program this past year, and we're excited to see what year number two has in store for the Wolverines. All righty, we'll take a timeout. We come on back. Alexander Ovechkin, the great eight, passed the great one yesterday. What are some of the most impressive records that may never be broken in sports? And also, what's one memory that you have as a sports fan that you remember a moment in history where you saw a crazy record be broken? We'll get to all that on the other side. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Standing by with the latest sports flash, here's the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. And it's time to ask the pros. We, the listener, get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet your question at INF Sports Center at Zach Gelb using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later in the show. We might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Alexander Ovechkin did it yesterday. Now has the most goals in NHL history. We'll have more on just that in just a second. But based off of that, you know, give me a record that you remember being broken that still sits with you to this day. And also, we'll go around the room and we will discuss, you know, maybe the most impressive sports record that is still out there. So we'll do some of that coming up in just a second. But let me take one call on this topic first. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Tom is in Myrtle Beach, and he has a memorable record. Tom, what's happening?
You know, I was lucky enough to be in Camden Yards on September 6, 1995, when Cal Ripken broke Lou Gehrig's record game 2-1-3-1. And not only do I not think that record will be broken, at least in my lifetime, Cal actually played 500 more games in a row after that game. So the record is 2,632. But to be in that stadium that night, it's hard to experience. And he had a home run that night on a 3-0 pitch in the sixth inning, and maybe the fifth inning. But to see that, I'm sure people have seen the videos, mm-hmm. See the banner come down. He was one of us. I'm from Baltimore. We're about the same age. He's a little bit younger. He's from Baltimore, lifelong. I mean, it was part of who we were being from Baltimore. I don't think the city's ever been more proud of their life of an individual, maybe except when we wrote the Star-Spangled Banner. But he played 500 more games in a row after that, which at that time was the longest hat-trick streak in the league.
And Tom, you know what the crazy part is? Obviously, a record like that, when he did in the moment, you knew how special it was. But just looking how sports are today, with load management in the NBA, how many off days they give in baseball as well. Like, we've seen some records that we thought were really special in the moment get broken, and then through time, they get broken again, and they don't age the same way as the authenticity of it happened in the moment. That's one that was so impressive in the moment, and it's got even better and better through the years.
And, you know, he faced criticism. There was some about, oh, you're not putting the team first, you need a day off. I remember there was some out of the New York Yankee media saying, oh, you'll be disrespectful to Lou Gehrig, you should sit a game out so his legacy lives on and stuff like that. But, I mean, I really just think he just felt that's what you do when you're a ball player, if the manager puts you in the lineup. I was actually at a game Wednesday night in Baltimore, and he was there, and he's sitting not too far from me. Every eye is still on him in Baltimore whenever he's around. And I promise you, number 8 Cal Ripken jerseys, which myself was wearing, they are more prevalent 30 years later than any other player. And it's not just the record. I think the civic pride he created for those of us from Baltimore will be eternal, you know, as long as we live. So that's my contribution to your question.
Tom, it's a great one, and it's definitely one that I thought of because we pulled some audio clips from some great records being broken, and we have that audio clip for you right now.
What began on May 30th, 1982, and continues September 6th, 1995. This game with the Angels trailing is now in the books. And let it be said that number 8, Cal Ripken Jr., has reached the unreachable star.
So there you go. All right, let's do this. Here is the memorable record for me. Barry Bonds passing Hank Aaron, and this is how it sounded.
Deals. And Bonds hits one high. Hits it deep. It is out of here. 756. Bonds stands alone. He is on top of the all-time home run list. What a special moment for Barry Bonds.
And I'll never forget that because I was at sleepaway camp. You don't really have access to a TV at sleepaway camp. But thankfully, looking back at it, I was sick. So I had to stay in the infirmary at the sleepaway camp, and they had a TV in the infirmary. So I was able to watch that with Barry Bonds hitting his 756th home run to be the home run king. Stu, what's a memorable record that you had that you remember being broken?
This is going to be a shocker.
So mine was from only a couple years ago. I'll play the audio.
Coming to the end of the third quarter, LeBron James has shouted history.
Really? LeBron stands alone! The NBA's all-time scoring record now belongs to LeBron James.
I know you're a Laker honk. I didn't think, even though it's incredible, right? LeBron, most points ever in the history of the NBA. I didn't think that's where you were going to go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's the first one that came to my mind. I've had other ones I thought of, but that was the first one that jumped out to me.
Did you take great pride in that in the moment? Because you've been up and down on LeBron.
I thought it was very impressive. I just think the longevity that he's had, people didn't think
Stupid.
He'd have. Yeah, it's absurd.
All right, Samter, what's your record that you remember being broken?
I initially was going to go with Cal Ripken, but because Tom took it away, there was another one. Growing up, because my last name is Samter, my nickname was Sammy.
Okay.
So I became a big Sammy Sosa fan. So the summer of 98 was so incredible. The two of those guys going after that, and obviously we know that steroids was involved with both of them, and obviously with Barry Bonds too, but that
moment... That was my era. Don't tell me it didn't happen, all right?
Before we knew what was really happening, we were just enjoying the moment, and the fact that Mark McGwire had a chance to break Maris's record with Sammy Sosa in right field.
Yeah.
Cardinals, Cubs, two of the biggest rivals in all of baseball... The two of those guys going head-to-head, and the fact that Mark McGwire did this in this moment, to me, was the most unforgettable moment in baseball history.
Down the left field line. Is it enough? Gone! There it is! 62! Touch first, Mark. You are the new single-season home run king.
And also, it was like a line drive just got out, and he was so excited that he... the first time around, missed first base and had to go back and touch it, as you heard from Joe Buck.
And the fact that Joe Buck was able to, in the moment, he probably has that call ready to go. The fact that he can alter what he's saying to make sure that Mark, you know, he calls that Mark McGwire has to touch first base, I thought was brilliant in the call. The moment was incredible. Afterwards, him and Sosa doing their patented, you know, punching each other in the stomach celebration. It was just, you know, the odds of that happening with those two guys battling it out and being against each other in that game, it was just amazing.
And we're up against it, so we'll play you more coming up later from Alexander Ovechkin breaking Wayne Gretzky's record, which for years, no one ever thought that would be broken, and deservedly so. It was 894 goals. He gets 895 the other day. For me, the most impressive record right now in sports, I would say it's the total points that Wayne Gretzky has. Because you could take away all 894 career goals that Wayne Gretzky had, and he would still have the most points in the history of the NHL with 1,963. Stu, what's your most impressive sports record?
Mine is Cy Young's 511 wins. Justin Verlander, who is one of the best pitchers of our generation, has 262, which is just over half, and he's basically done. No one's ever coming close to 511.
We may never even see a 300 game winner.
Yeah, let alone again. 511.
Yeah, so let's stop with the 511. And not even 300. Samter, what's your record?
I was going to go with Nolan Ryan's 5,714.
What figure skating are we getting from
Samter? Yeah, exactly. I was going to go with Nolan Ryan's 5,714 strikeout to 1,000 more than second place Randy Johnson, or his seven no-hitters. More than Koufax at number two with four. But I'm going to go Jerry Rice, actually. The triple crown in receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns. He has over 5,000 more yards more than second place Larry Fitzgerald. He has over 41 touchdowns more than second place. He has the record in receptions also. Every one of those records is unbeatable. And the fact that he has all three of them, and by as much as he does, it's incredible.
All righty, this is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll talk more about that Ovi moment on the other side. We'll play you some of the audio on Long Island yesterday, as you did see Alexander Ovechkin move past the great one, as the great eight now sits alone in the number one spot for the most goals in the history of the NHL. Also, we saw Gino Auriemma win his 12th national championship yesterday as well. Which coach would you take in basketball? Which coach would you take in football if you had to win one game to win it all? 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476.